Good morning. I usually make my introductions not from memory, like Rebbe can do. But when Rabbi Kier called me yesterday, we're here January 8th, 2016, at the Young Israel of Hollywood.
Erev Shabbos Kodesh.
So when I spoke to Rabbi Kier 2 days ago, and he mentions to me that he wants to come hear my Rebbe, I kind of took a step back. Even though I'm affiliated with the yeshiva for the last 15 years, I'm on the board, I have triplets there now, my son was there through 11th grade. So I was a little shocked, a little taken aback. But when he mentioned that, he read every one of Rebbe's 7 books. And he read Nussan Kamenetsky's book, and he loves baseball. That was the kicker, because that's my relationship with my Rebbe for the last 35 years. We talk Torah, we talk philosophy, we talk politics, and we talk baseball. And that's what makes our kesher so close. So when Rabbi Kier said he wanted to have the Bachrim come to speak to him, Rebbe's under a lot of time pressure here in the States. He said, okay, for you, and if he says Rabbi Kier wants to have him speak, I'm going to set aside some time for him. So without further ado, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet.
We also have a gentleman, a good friend of mine, visiting from Baltimore, from Yid HaTzadik. I don't say those words lightly. Let me reintroduce myself with the Devar Torah. Well, you know, we're caught up now with what happened to Bnei Israel in Egypt. I have Yavidu at Farach. Bnei Israel at Farach. It's a very interesting chazal. It's a Medrash Rabbah. And whenever I say it's a chazal or Medrash Rabbah, I can tell you if I have a son-in-law, I once quoted a Medrash on Borel Machrivan. He went to the computer, he found 36 different references. I know it from Medrash Rabbah. And Chazal said, what does it mean that they tortured Bnei Yisrael, made them work very hard? So Chazal say, women did men's work, and men had to do women's work. Now, let's analyze for a second. Men did women's work. Now, with all due respect to the feminist movement, there are facts that can't be denied. The American army has found it out. The Israeli army has found it out. Women can't do the physical labor that a man is capable of. This is a fact of life, the way God made the world. So a man doing women's work, what's so terrible, you understand? I can understand when you have a woman and you want her to do a man's work. That is difficult. That is torture. But the slouch off, you know, it's like someone who can get 98 in his bechinot, and he gets 68, and, you know, the Rebbe's going to hit him over the head. You're not living up to your potential. But, all right, Elach Sichai, she's laughing at the world. He spends the extra 30 points. He's busy watching baseball games. Well, I don't know, he has football, soccer, whatever you're interested in. So, it is a klala, because we all have abilities. And if you don't achieve what your abilities enable you to, that's a wasted life. No? Chazal knew what they were saying. But I want to come back to the other equation. A woman who has to do a man's task. And if I were to describe my life, and I'm no youngster, although Sunday, Monday in the classroom, some of you would fear the shirm, you know that. If I want to be a wise guy, we have big crowds, but it's not just the students, let's say, range from 23, 24 to 32, let's say, in the Kollel per se. But I have outsiders sitting in who are, you know, very world-famous people, but retired rabbis, professors, multimillionaires, etc. So I always will say, who's the youngest here? And a kid will say, Rebbe, I'm 23. When I begin this year, gentlemen, the Rebbe, yours truly, is 22. So, I've lived a long time, thank God. I've been active a long time. It's 57 years, as I said at the start of the year. I only eat Heinz products this year. 57 varieties, 57th year of teaching Torah. My life has been part of a generation where a lot of women had to do men's work. Who are we? What are we? My family came to America in 1900. Well, my 4 grandparents, single, kids, 16, 17. I don't have to tell you the backgrounds they came from. Years later, I found out what yichus I have. But thank God I didn't know when I was a kid. I might have slouched off. It's only when I realized yichus is nothing, shalikt in dread, which I don't want to translate. I found out my yichus. So I have two sets of grandparents, which most normal people have. Today, with the world, you'll never know what's going to happen. But until recently, you had two sets of grandparents. So I had one set of grandparents, my Seda, learned in the Lushan, could quote Gemaras by heart. From his wife, I have a very big yichus. And in America, if he went to Shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that was about it. Maybe he went to some Simchas Torah. It's one set of grandparents. My other grandparents, my Zayda, never was able to speak English, spoke Yiddish, knew he was a Baal Tefillah, didn't know what the words meant, but he was a good Baal Tefillah. I once asked him, Zayda, how can it be you don't speak Russian? You lived in Russia till you were 15, 16. He said all we had to know in Russian was how to curse the Goyim, and he taught me the curse words, which came in very handy to me in my work for the Mossad in Russia, which I believe I write about. If I don't write about it, I've spoken about it, that aspect of it, why it was good to know curse words. And he never, ever was Mechalel Shabbos. Now, go and figure it out. And a kid like myself, we had two great visions in life. And I've spent my whole life involved in these two visions. Those of you who know me know I have only one value, Torah. One was to rebuild Torah after World War II. And I don't have to tell you, you don't start to understand what life was like when I was a little kid. A Shomer Shabbos kid in the Bronx. Millions, hundreds of thousands of Jews, maybe one tenth of 1% Shomer Shabbos. Yeah, there were people over 70 who didn't work Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They didn't work Shabbos too. But under 70, above 13, wow. That was one goal that the Ribbono Shel Olam burdened us with. And the second goal, of course, was the Pleitei Cherev, the Saridim, persecuted, impoverished, many of the Jews backward yet from Arabic countries to build the state of Israel. And we were a lot of women, but we took on a yeoman's job, way above our abilities. But I'll come back and end off with the Devar Torah that I said recently in the Kollel, and it I've gotten so many emails came in, this Hasidic Rebbe said it, that, because I attributed to the Lubavitcher. But had it been mid-50s, early 50s, you know, Lubavitch, people don't realize, Lubavitch began small. No one in life realizes that. The Rebbe was not the Rebbe back in 51, 52. It was a Rebbe, another Rebbe. When the Rav started teaching in YU, who was he? They looked at him like some wild genius, but you develop. You become the Rav. Yeah, and students develop you. Without, it's an open Gemara. If you don't have students, you're never going to become a Gadol. You can be a Lamdan, but it's not a Gadol. There's a big difference. So group of us from YU decided to go out to Crown Heights to go to Fabring, and it may have been Yud Shvat, Yud Tet Kislev, I don't remember. Yud Shvat is coming. It certainly was in Yud Bet Tammuz, because it was not during the summer. So someone probably told the Rebbe there, a bunch of wise Aleks here, Litvakin from YU. So the Rebbe, and you know, I could swear he was looking right at us. I mean, this is the greatness of Chassidic Rebbe. The Rebbe said, L'chaim, L'chaim. So 100,000 people believed that Rebbe was looking right at them with that L'chaim. So the Rebbe says, I'm living it in Yiddish. Can I speak Yiddish or it's lost here?
That's
right, Rebbe.
We're not so Yiddish.
Bunch of Goyim, what can I say? How I know Yiddish, you'll ask me, but that's a different story. So I'm living it in Yiddish, but I'll try to translate. It's not good. I have three languages I say that I'm totally at home in, but they're all with a Bronx accent. So the Rebbe says, it's a good zach. It's good that the Maccabim were not Litvaken. If they would have been Litvaken, there would be no miracle of Hanukkah. And he explained, a Litvak walks into the Beis HaMikdash, you know, the Gemara in Bamed Matlikin, and he finds one little cruse of oil that will last for 24 hours, that's it. No, when it comes to the menorah, once you light it, tamid, it's not allowed to go out. It has to be constantly lit, relit. They would check in the morning, at night, relight it. You make the cheshbon. Have a cloud, you will know it. Oynes Rachmanu Patre. When you can't do something, you're Patre. You know, if you're lost in a desert and you don't know when Tisha B'Av is, you're not going to come back and be punished for eating on Tisha B'Av. Oynes Rachmanu Patre. He says the Litvakin would have made a cheshman and would have said, we got to send someone up north. And by the way, the Rans explains why it took 7 days, 3 days to go to the Galil to get the oil. Shabbos you can't travel. It's not Toiches Shabbos. And 3 days to get back. So they would have made the cheshbon. We'll wait 7 days and then we'll light the menorah. A dank God saying, Geven Chassid and the Chassidic Yidden, they don't look already with cheshbon, or they don't start thinking with a halachic scratch. Mitzvah habol liyotcha al tach mitzena. They lit, and that's how we have the Nes Chanukah. So I want to end off that sitting here in the year 2017.
Sitting, that's on purpose. Maybe I have to explain that.
If they don't know that vote, if their Rebbeim haven't taught them that, they better find new Rebbeim, that's all I can say. You don't open your mouth without thinking what the results will be. You follow? So if it's 2016, you have to think what you're saying, what the implication is a year, 50 years, 100 years from now. You understand? So for me, it's 2017 now. I have to get used to that because I was still in 2016. Eisehu chacham haroet hanolalif, an open Mishnah. So, Baruch Hashem, we were burdened with tremendous tasks by the Ribbono shel Olam. We were bebechinat women, weak, never saw the old home in our lives. I'm third generation American, as you gather. My parents were born in Harlem. I knew baseball statistics inside out. Until today, I used to talk with Baron Lichtenstein in learning. We would discuss the Chicago Cubs in their starting language, 1945, the last World Series they were in. I eulogized him. That was in the eulogy too. He was the last one I could talk about who Phil Cavaretta was. I mentioned Phil Cooksmidon via Namaritz. I'm talking to you on Phil Cavaretta and you're looking at me. 355, most valuable player, good marriage, an Italian. He died a few years ago, the eldest living survivor of the 1945 Cubs. Lost the World Series four games to three. Who did it? That my father's friend from around the corner with whom he grew up within the Bronx, Hank Greenberg, who returned from World War II and slugged the Tigers to the pennant and then to the World Series. So we were women and we were burdened, but we did a great job, Baruch Hashem. Not me, I didn't do that much. I should have done a lot more considering who I grew up with and who I know and what I've been exposed to. But at least I tried my best, and take a look what we have today, a new world of Torah and an unbelievable state of Israel. Well, I'm living there 47 years. Mi milel umi pilel. Who could ever have believed that someone would have said to Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin and David Ben-Gurion that the head of the Mossad, the head of the Shin Bet, the head of the police, don't miss a minyan, not just for Shacharis, but for, you know, the sensitivity of a religious person. The barometer is a befelt nishta mincha, of course. Mara Shabbos, the Shacharis, the morning, Marav at night, you remember, you got to go to sleep, so did I daven Marav. But mincha, who would ever dream? So Baruch Hashem, that's where we're at. And ani modeh l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Kier, you take over now.
So you just brought up that one of the things you said, you were Hashem, you had a schus and be educated and be around many great people.
Right.
Of what I know, you learned by Baron Cutler, Moshe Feinstein, and Soloveitchik. Were you in all three of their shirim?
No. Reb Moshe, I spoke in learning. You know, it was in the rabbinate. Who, when you got smicha, they gave you Aragon 71212. They gave you a phone number. It's in my Yerkit Moshe. I have it marked up when I spoke with him. So I knew Reb Moshe quite well. But that was from the rabbinate. It wasn't as a student. Although Reb David Feinstein, Reb Reuven, we interacted. Reb Reuven actually married a girl from Bnei Akiva, from my brother's shevet. She's principal of this, very successful. So we knew her, Kaplan, Rabbi Kaplan's daughter. I think her name was Sheila Kaplan, if I'm not mistaken. My brother was very friendly. My brother's 2 years younger, but my brother was Reb Heshi Shachter. He wasn't born Reb Heshel, he was born Heshi. Heshi and my brother Lenny at the time, Levi today, learned together for many years. But I'll tell you, when I was a kid, you see, I have within me the advantage of both being FFB and I have the advantage of a BT. What do I mean by that? I've been shroom all my life. In other words, from the age of 12, 11, I certainly was in the Chalal Shabbos. So I'm not a Baal Tshuva in that sense. But I didn't have parental guidance. I was guiding my parents. So I had total freedom of choice. More or less. That's a Baal Tshuva's greatness. Makom Shabal Tshuva made an sakon yechalama because it's not a gama. My good friend Eli Schlesberg, he had fabulous parents. Right or wrong? How much choice did they give you? Okay. How much choice? I saw what you're writing for your grandchildren. I saw the bracha. Has two books coming out on the Baltimore and growing up and his community and the fascinating story. But that's, parental guidance. I was free to choose, more or less. Later in life, it boomerangs. And I desperately wanted, Reb Baron started teaching. I was a kid in high school. I was a bright kid. And I went to Lakewood. I went to Reb Baron and Borough Park. I read about it in Washington. It was a three-story walk-up. And I thought I would come in and see angels. Instead, I saw dartboards where his grandchildren were shooting at the dartboards in the living room wall. That was Reb Baron. And he gave me Bechina Masechet Kedushin. As I said, I had a good mind. As Chazal say, you may churpi, charifut. When you're young, your mind is sharp. You get older already. All right, you have much more knowledge, but you don't have the same sharpness. And I explained to them what that means. It'll take 2 hours to explain. Reb Baron's eyes lit up like two Sifrei Torah. The pupils, I'll never forget. So I went to Lakewood. I was very happy in Lakewood. And Reb Baron told the Alter Mashgiach, Reb Nosson Wachtvogel, he wants me, and he used to give me oranges every day like a special gift, and he used to regale me with stories about when he learned in Yeshua, Rabbi, why you today? And how Dr. Belkin came from Europe, and he said, I'm breaking into Yiddish, English. And he sat with Reb Shmuel Belkin. Dr. Belkin taught him Gemara, and he taught Dr. Belkin English. You follow? But then what happened? Then my parents intervened. And my mother, not my father, was with a good Jewish marriage. Women ruled. Men worked, came home, and the wives prepared a good meal for them. They read the paper, heard the news, and went to sleep. But your mother, the women, who are the rulers of the house? It's the women, at least from where I come from. I make big decisions whether we should ban Iran, whether she elect Obama again. All other decisions my wife makes, you follow? And that's a happy marriage. So my mother got hysterical. She said, I went to college, and you're not going to go to college. And So they put a lot of heat on me. And I made a deal I would give YU a one-year try. So I went to YU, and I haven't left. It's how many years later? Already 51 to 2017. I write about it in the book, my first letter. And that's in high school was a fabulous experience. I was an MTA, but then I went to Yeshiva College. And the first lecture I heard in college, September 1955, I still quote it in Hashkafa lectures until today, from Professor Louis H. Feldman. He looked like a Greek god. A guy walks in, a PhD from Harvard. He had taught in Trinity. And the guy and his knowledge of Greek and Latin. And we're blown away. And he gives a whole lecture, how do we know the Bible is true? And he compares it to Greek tradition and Roman tradition. And what a lecture. And we didn't know who he was. He was new. It was the first class he ever taught. I was in the very first class. And then we heard rumors that he washes Natila Judaim, he eats. Right? Then we found out he's a Baal Tshuva from New Haven, long before the Baal Tshuva were popular. And he turned into, you know, one of the most famous classic professors in the United States. Interestingly, he's the only one that I knew that it was at both his marriages. It's unheard of to get divorced when I was growing up. His first wife married a prominent rabbi's daughter. She was best friends with another Gadol B'Yisrael's daughter. Married 7 years, and those two women threw away Kol HaTorah Kula. Left their Jewish husbands, and intermarried. One father and mother sat Shiva. I don't know if both pairs, but sat Shiva. It's a well-known story. The second woman he married was an orphan from the Holocaust, a Chassidic Rebbe's daughter, raised by her uncle, who was a Rebbe in Brooklyn. It's the first wedding I was ever at where there was total separation of the men and women. His first wife was a college professor. His second wife was a kindergarten teacher. And it worked into a beautiful, beautiful marriage. They should live and be well. My wife just asked me last night, is Louis and Rivka, how are they? I said, I don't know anything to the contrary. They should be fine, but they're well into their 80s. So that's how I know them. I also had the schut, you should know, I spoke in London by Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. The world doesn't realize he was the posek of America. And I had a big problem in my first rabbinate. It was a new shul. I was the second rabbi there. The second shul, where I really spent the rest of the decade in America, I was the first rabbi of the first Orthodox shul. I built it from the ground in Maplewood, South Orange, New Jersey, Beth Ephraim. Today, it's they took over the church. It's Chabad is there. They have an era of Mi Milel or Mi Pilel. So in my first shul, it was a handful of people. Today it's the major synagogue in all of Pennsylvania, Lower Merion Synagogue. And came Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you get a big crowd, all the Jews who don't come all year come. So the Adat Yisrael, the conservative temple across the street, said they would give us their library to daven in. So I called Rav Henkin, and I asked him, can we daven in a conservative temple? So he asked me one question. You're putting in a mechitza? I said, absolutely. It'll be a mechitza kedat v'kedin. He said, I don't see any problem. He says, as long as you're doing the davening your way, what's the problem? And that's where we davened. And I remember I put up a big sign on the bulletin board that I should have saved it. You know, at the time, you figure it's unimportant. But I put up a whole sign with the day I spoke with him and what I asked him and what he answered, and kachav, and we davened there. And then I had one of the big shocks of my life. We finished mincha, and we had a few minutes to ne'ilah. And, everyone walked out to get a breath of fresh air because it wasn't the best of conditions in the library, and it was stuffy, and it was a big crowd. And I see the police are there, and there's a car. What a backup of traffic. Hundreds of cars were coming back to the temple for Ne'ilah. And I remember, you know, as a youngster, I was flabbergasted. You know, I didn't know what was going on in the world. And I've often said to my Talmidim, I wonder how many of their grandchildren are still Jewish. If 5% are still Jewish. I'm probably overestimating the reality. Gentlemen, any questions that you have, you may shoot at me. Don't be shy. Don't be bashful. I also have to tell you, let me also go beyond. B'nai Akiva was a very big influence in my life. And actually, I don't have the chutzpah to say I argued, but I dialogued with Rav Aharon Katlan B'nai Akiva. And I hold until today, had Rav Aharon gone to Israel instead of coming to America, he would have been much more close to Mizrahi. Do you know why? His whole family, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's whole family became Mizrahiite. Rabbi Zalman himself was a classic Mizrahiite. You're aware of this. You know who Rabbi Zalman was, right? You know the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. And his son was the founder of the first Hesda Yeshiva, Hadarom. His other son was professor of Bible at Bar Ilan. I still met members of the family, the Meltzer family. And his grandson-in-law was new Rabbi Yehuda Mital, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's partner in the Gush. And I always felt, because I remember, so I was telling Rabbi Aaron, see, I'll explain to you what I got out of B'nai Akiva, which is so important at this very moment as well. And Rabbi Aaron said to me, it's noch nicht im ganzen der richtige Hashkafa. It's not, still not the right guy. Right? Rabbi Aaron's entitled to his opinion, but also Aaron Akevitz entitled to his opinion. That's the Torah world in which I was raised. I'm a Litvak. It doesn't exist today, the world that I was raised. Today, if there's one Litvak left in America, they're going to put him into the Smithsonian in a cage and say, this is the last of the Lithuanian Torah Jews. And you know what I'm saying. Understand, when you wear a uniform, which, by the way, in America, you have to wear to remain a good Jew, you become a chassid. A uniform is a portable ghetto. I'm quoting Rakefet now. Chassidim developed the concept of a portable ghetto. You can't live in a real ghetto, but if you dress a certain way and everyone knows, I can do whatever I want. No one knows. I'm throwing my take off my yarmulke, cook a chais Vienna guy. I look like any Gentile in the world, right or wrong. I can't pass for Obama. I'd have to get Al Jolson to take care of my face. But outside of that, if you have a uniform, then it blocks you. Follow me, you gotta think twice. So today we have a tremendous Hasidic world, but I'll tell you what I got out of B'nai Akiva, and this is an unbelievable gift, B'nai Akiva in my time, the Tohar Hamidot, honesty, not running after money, not letting money blind you. It was unbelievable. We were kids growing up in America, and our entire goal and vision was to go on Aliyah, and at that time it was Aliyah, Kibbutz Hadati. And I remember hearing a shmuis from Rabbi Lichtenstein's sister, Hadassah, who just lost her husband. She buried a brother and a husband within 1 year, Rafa Kleinman, a fabulous individual, Tzvi Kleinman from Chicago. And I remember Hadassah speaking about her parents, Reb Aaron's parents, Blimer and Reb Yechiel, how every month they had to sit. They were teachers for Central and Brooklyn Talmudical Academy. And every month they had to weigh every penny and what they could buy and what they could afford. And I remember Hadassah saying, but in Kibbutz Hadati, you don't have any of these problems. You just live your life. You serve the Almighty. You build the land of Israel, and you don't worry about money. It's unimportant that you don't need the luxuries of life. That was Hadassah Lichtenstein. I cannot tell you from B'nai Akiva of North America, from my time, we once held a reunion, must be 20 years ago. We took B'nai HaUmah, the biggest meeting hall in Jerusalem, and there were thousands of people outside, direct descendants. Today we can't even hold a reunion. You'd need a Yankee Stadium. And even Yankee Stadium may not be big enough. You probably need a stadium like they have in Melbourne where 100,000 Mishigoyim go to watch a Melbourne football game. It's different football than it's less aggressive and physical contact than American football, but it's called Australian football. So that I got out of B'nai Akiva. I didn't see it anywhere else. And boy, is that a powerful message. even today. And that guided me in my life, because I'm ashamed to tell you, I amounted to nothing. I was offered many big positions with august titles, and I turned it all down. I had the right wife, and it was not easy, because if you know the state of Israel after the Yom Kippur War, it's not that your salary went down, it's simply they took it away by force, voluntary so-called war bonds, and it was a very, very difficult period. Most of the economy was black. And if you were, I was teaching a full-time job for the Jewish Agency, a full-time job for the State of Israel, Michola. No, when you teach for the Agency of the State of Israel, no money goes under the table. And it was very, very difficult. But I always had that B'nai Akiva gene in me that all I want to do, I was very selfish, I just want to sit and learn. I want to master Kol HaTorah Kula. I never got there, but at least no one can accuse me of not trying all these decades. And that, if you master Kol HaTorah Kula, you have what to teach. But that was B'nai Akiva. That I got out of B'nai Akiva. I didn't get that from Reb Aaron. I didn't get that from my Rebbe. That I got from B'nai Akiva. I can tell you even more, and I've told my students this. It makes a Hollywood movie. So I wound up in the American rabbinate. I wound up at YU, or Rosh Yeshiva. I was very happy, very fulfilled. I forgot about B'nai Akiva. And then the Six-Day War came. And it was very hard to fall asleep in America again. Then my good friends from the Bronx, my wife's Madricha, B'nai Akiva, Miriam Beinhorn Levinger, Reb Moshe Levinger, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, his wife, Yibadol L'chaim Aruchim, they went to Hebron, 68, Pesach of 68, never came back, sleeping on the floor. And we said, how can we remain in America? And my wife pushed me, because the Rav always used to compliment me, oh, you know how to excite your students teaching at Tosfot. You see, that was an achievement, to teach American kids in the 60s at Tosfot and get them excited. So, we're going to Aliyah. No, you have to say goodbye to your Rebbeim. So I contacted my various Rebbeim. I have smicha from the yeshiva, but I have a direct link to Rabbi Israel Salanta. The elementary school I went to is Yeshiva Salanta, the only yeshiva in the Bronx. And I have the only smicha given by his grandson Talmud that Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson gave one smicha all the years he was in the United States. I have it. The family once made a big party in Jerusalem in my honor because we exchanged copies of his smicha and I gave them the smicha he gave me. So he was a Talmud of the Altov Slabatka, who was a Talmud of Yisrael Salanta. So, you know, the Rav Lesson was very stoic. Musa, you know, wished me well, gave me a beautiful letter. Rav David Lifshitz, the Tzuvah Rav, says to me, he spoke Hebrew to me, Ma, ataloma fachet? You're not frightened? And I say, Ani somech al tzvach haganali Yisrael v'yal haribayna shalaylam. And I depend upon the army. And the Ribbono Shel Olam, he said, Yafer Mata, you said it well. And we went into a whole discussion of Yaakov Avinu preparing to meet Esav, how he prepared, and what order you have to put it on. You follow? The tefillah has to come last. You have to make the hachana before. Tzva Hagana Yisrael, that was in 68, right after the Six-Day War. I tell my talmidim, after serving in the army, all my children serving in the army, all my grandchildren, I have already 13 grandchildren in the army, I say, today I know I said the wrong order. I should have said, I need some mechal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael. But then I go to the Rav, and the Rav says, what do you think? He said, this is Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, down to earth. He says, how will you make a living? How will you support yourself? And I'm going to Israel. I said, Rebbe, I don't know yet. Let me get there. If I were to meet the Rav today, 47 years later, I'd say, Rebbe, I still haven't answered your question properly. Baruch Hashem, we're here. Met the Rav, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. I can at least say that in my years in Israel, I have left an open book. I don't have to be ashamed of anything done. I can't say I've conquered the world financially, but I thank B'nai Akiva for enabling me to have proper values, and this is to their credit, and that's something I got from them, as I mentioned before, which I did not achieve or did not feel elsewhere. Today we have a lot of problems, and constantly I get questions about misdeeds of Rabbanim and Mechanchim, and I always have to fall back on a concept that I write about in Washington. Judaism is perfect, Jews are not. With all that we suffer with the headlines and people in federal penitentiaries and elsewhere, but don't let that affect your commitment to Torah. And as I've told my students more than once, if you, in the course of a lifetime, you have a Rebbe or two you become close with and observed up front, and you see the totality of their Torah existence, be inspired and use him as the role model. Ein tzadik baretz asher lo yechtav v'yaseh kulo tov, but take the one that the kulo tov is a lot more dominant than the chataim. Torah tashem tamima. If you have a problem with a rabbi, a rebbe, someone you saw an immoral deed, don't throw away the Torah. Throw away that person, but don't throw away the Torah. Don't be like the ex-satma who leave and write books you read unorthodox. You have to rip kriya. A book like that you have to read in your birthday suit in a sealed room, because if you read it with clothes on, you have to rip kriya. And that's the true story with the Panovitz Rav. They asked the Panovitz Rav, in Israel, if you do something good, they asked you to run for the Knesset. Chaim Drukman called me, it goes back, early 80s, want me to run for the Knesset, give me a safe seat. And I know Chaim Drukman from the time he was a Shliach B'nai Akiva to America. And he used to come to the Rav Shurim. That's how long I know Chaim. I spoke about him. I'll tell you in a second. So Chaim calls me, he said, Chaim Tishman. Do you know Matan Hebrew? Or again, I have to go to English.
Translate, really.
Gentlemen, learn Matan Hebrew. Without that, you can't. I trust you're all going to be good Jews and not worship idols. If you remain in America, you're right away. Show them the Gemara at the end of Ketuvah, please. Kol hadaba chutzlaretz kilo aved aved zara. In Israel, we don't worship idols, Baruch Hashem. We worship the Almighty and the Jewish people and the Torah and all that's contained within it. So, if you're going to go to Israel, it's good to know Matan Hebrew. Also, so many important svarim are being published today in Matan Hebrew. Very, very important. So I told Chaim Kirtishma, Ata yachol, anila. Ani lo yachol azuz, me hashulchan shali b'toch hakita. I can't leave my, what do you call it, your shulchan, how would I call it, the desk. The desk in the room. So they once said, so that was my answer to him. And we remained very good friends. He understood me. The Panovitz Rav was asked, Rabbi Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, the legendary Panovitz Rav, I yet met him, and they used to say about the Panovitz Rav, Eli, that he not only knows where to raise money, he knows where not to raise money. They said that's a meiridik litvishavach in the Panovitz Rav. So they asked him to head up the Agudat Yisrael list to the Knesset. So he said, Ich bin nicht genug reich, I'm not rich enough. So they looked at him, Rebbe, was make me? What do you mean? He says, I would have to buy a new suit every day to be in the Knesset, because every day you hear the left wing, you have to rip kriya when they speak. That was the fun of the Tzirab. So that's the book on Orthodox. Judaism is perfect. Jews are not. Unfortunately, it's a very bad period. My Talmidim say to me, Rebbe, was there anything like this when you were growing up? And I have, you know, I told you, world famous people sitting there, Professor Tarrigan, Dr. Hexter, etc., Rabbi Rubin, etc. So I say, to the elder gentleman here, will you agree with me that we never heard of such scandals? So, of course, your generation says, ah, it can't be. You had scandals, but they swept them under the carpet. I tell you, we did not have scandals. I mean, you grew up in Baltimore. Do you remember scandals like this today? Maybe 1% of what you have today. I don't remember any.
We're sitting here with young men who come from the yeshiva. It's a black hat yeshiva, I think. They're couple of black hats here. I'd like the Rav to speak on Achdus. You know, you talk to young men like this about Bnei Akiva.
Favor, bring me a coffee.
It's sometimes foreign today. We live in a society, you know, Mizrahi of America, right after the war, was, I know in Baltimore, where I'm from, it was a Mizrahi town. It has moved all the way to the right. And there are two reasons. One, most of the Mizrahis made Aliyah.
Right, that's the real reason.
They left.
They're gone.
But still, there is a... what about the Achdus? I mean, Torah is definitely the only thing that can create the Achdus between people of the left and people of the right, okay? But I'd like the Rav to just talk about that.
Tolerance. You know that I have 1,200, every shir is different, and I cry for the shiurim I gave before there was an internet and a website, because I gave some very good shiurim in the 70s, you know, when the kollel opened into the 80s, they lost forever. Now, you know, Sunday I play with Shas and Paiskim, I haven't repeated a shiur since the kollel began in 78, and the new book coming out, for the first time I'm publishing in Halacha, a very, very deep material. And it's based upon Shurim I gave in the Kola, must be late 70s, early 80s, that a Talmud had. But on Monday, I've been free. The Talmidim said, Rebbe, whatever you want to talk about. So, over the years, I spoke 22 years on the Rav. I spoke 4 years this week, Torah and Modern Times, my doctorate. I spoke 10 years on questions students asked me. And now I'm in the fourth year in the history of Torah in the United States. And certainly on Monday, the message that I try to drive home is that there's a big difference between halacha and hashkafa. Halacha, you take the Rambam, the Hakdama LeMishneh Torah. So the Rambam asks, you know, imagine a wise guy here is going to say, I want to do a boil water to clean the knife for the Brit Milah on Shabbos. That's a homachlokes in the Gemara. Hechsherei Milah, the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuflamet Aleph, as well. Eliezer, imagine there's a wise guy here who'll say, I paskin like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and he's going to baste his chicken in milk, sour cream. He says, I paskin like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So the Rambam raises this question. If you don't know Hakdamat Rambam LeMishneh Torah, you should know it by heart, but you should teach them. It's very important. So the Rambam says we can have all the machlokes in the world, but the Gemara, their maskana, to use the words of the Rambam, hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. We can't change a maskana. I once discussed this with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik in 1978.
Hope it's good. I've never made a coffee in my
life. I discussed with Rav Soloveitchik in 78. Now, you got to remember, when I was a kid sitting in front of the Rav, I knew one millionth of what I know today. And yet, you're considered a good student. All right. By 78 already, I had many Talmidim, and I was like a pencil sharpener. I'm sharpened. I discussed with the Rav hours we spoke and learning in Boston. And we discussed this whole question, and the Rav said what the Rambam said is an ongoing process, that we constantly are trying to reach an agreement that this is the halacha. We don't want to go on with machlokes indefinitely. Give me an example. When you get a shaila today in Orach Chaim, what do you look at? The Mishnah Berurah. Who had a Mishnah Berurah 200 years ago? Who had a Mishnah Berurah 150 years ago? Who had a Mishnah Berurah 110 years ago. But you see, the Mishnah Berurah achieved already his schemu. In Israel, whenever there's a shaila on Hilchot Shabbos, they look at Shmirat Shabbat kehilchata. Rav Norwich Sefer achieved like a consensus. Hashkafa, you can look at the Gemara. There's endless machloket in the Gemara when it comes to Hashkafa. I'd give you one simple example. The Gemara in Bracha Taflamet Hey Are you allowed to go to work? No, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. The other opinion of Yishmael, do you go to college? Do you prepare? Do you live normally? Do you depend upon miracles? Why didn't Paschkin? Hashkafa is very open. And the secret is to understand when it comes to Hashkafa, we're all the end of the Gemara Brachot. Kishem Shadat Kayim Einandamot Patseim Einandamot. We're different types of individuals. I have many descendants, Kanayin Hara. I don't have basically two grandsons who went to the same Hesda yeshiva. And when they finished Hesda, everyone is doing something else. I have in the Hebrew U, Tel Aviv U, Bezalel, Technion in Haifa, you name it, Ariel University, everyone is doing something else. It's my point of view. I'm the proudest person alive that I have Talmidim who wear Bekishes, Lange Begodim, Gattles, Strimels on Yontif. And when they meet me on Cholamoid Sukkot, Cholamoid Pesach, and Yerushalayim HaKodesh, they say, Shalom Aleichem, Mori Urebi, Mo'adim L'Simcha, Chagim U'Zmanim L'Sason, and they kiss me. And I have other students in Kibbutz Adati, can meet them at Cholamoid in shorts, doing what they have to do. And they hug me. You can't force. See, I'm from a different world. My Rebbe used to get hysterical. The Rebbe used to get hysterical and shout at us at Yiddish, don't do what I do because I do it. Only do it if you're convinced I'm right. And the Rebbe had the greatest Derech Eretz. You could be all the way from Chassid, Ayeka, Tarum Derech Eretz, whatever point of view, there's plenty of room to breathe. Unfortunately, many of you are exposed that you have to do it one way only, you have to look one way only. To me, that's not a healthy attitude. As a Rebbe, I haven't won in all. I'm not so proud of all my students, but percentage-wise, I'm doing okay. And that's what we got from the Rav, very different. I can tell you in the state of Israel what's happening, and it's a long process, but it is happening. People are starting to forge in the center. You're becoming a unit. Let me explain myself. You hear a lot of anti-Israel talk. If anyone speaks anti-Israel talk in front of me, I slug him, beat him, knock him to the ground, do everything I don't believe in. And then I say to him, you're absolutely right. But why are you talking? Come to Israel and make it better. Israel is a democracy. I don't believe in Halavaya Malchut, but we have to live with reality. It's a democracy. Each one of us makes a little better. We all have one vote. Our ballot is our bullet. Oh, Rebbe, I never thought of that. You're right, I should. What are you talking? Who are you talking against me? I've done nothing wrong. But you're right, we have certain problems. North Tel Aviv, the stores open on Shabbos, Kuldayi, the member, Kachalon, that big phony. The more from Jews we have, it's Eretz Yisrael. Come, help build it. We built it. When I came in Aliyah, every Jew in the whole state, there were 1.5 million Jews. You know, we're going on to 7 million halachic Jews today. Just think for a minute. So, you know, there's now a third, fourth generation living in Israel, and there are now television series on the Haredim. I love them, I love them. One of them was written by my granddaughter-in-law's first cousin, the biggest Talmud Chacham ever to represent Israel. He was the ambassador to London, and he's an enigma of the Majestad Rebbe, Danny Taub, a genius, a big Talmud Chacham, a professor, international law, and he writes TV scripts, Hechatzeh. If you haven't seen the 26, it's an ongoing story. It's fabulous, about a Hasidic Rebbe. Now there's one everyone knows about, Shtissel. It's caught the attention of the whole country. It's on Mea Sharim, Geula. Fabulous. So, you know, these kids are waking up and they say, you know, Israel's a nice place. This is Eretz Yisrael. Rakefet is right. What are we mad at? We got to make it better. these kids already, you go into Machon Lev, no one wants to be poor. Why don't we work for a living? You go into Machon Lev today, I daven there at least once a week, because I give shir Sunday afternoon, evening in Gruss. So I daven Mincha Ritfor in Machon Lev, which is adjacent to our campus. And there are now 2,000 Haredim studying in Machon Lev. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? I'm proud to tell you, there's a Hezda Haredi headed up by my student who comes right from Miami Beach, Rabbi Carmi Gross. And that began in Machon Lev. And you understand, the head of the computer department is my Talmud from Gruss, so why you mismach? No, he hugs me, embraces me. I once saw when I was Bekeshon, he's a Slonim Achasid. I said to him, I don't recognize you without your Bekeshon. He's the head of the computer department. The president and vice president are both YU graduates, Koenig, and they're my students, Dewey Hershowitz, vice president. And boy, did they run an operation. My only problem is, and I'll end off with this, I am watching the clock, but I can tell you, and this is B.D. Havayuvda, it happened to me, very simply. 2 years ago, fortunately, unfortunately, I don't know, the world must go crazy, but I get more hits on my shroom than any other Rosh Hashiva. So some man, a couple, he actually, his uncle, his brother was my student, his nephew is my student and very close to me, heads up a big rabbinic program. So they decided to give $1 million to YU in honor of Malka and Aaron Rakefe. No, for $1 million, Richard Joel went into motion and they brought us to America. And this is a true story. And a year and a half ago, I gave 9 different lectures. I was declared, I don't know what to say, but say the Bernard Revel Graduate School. My first 2 books came out in the 4th edition, Revel and Silver. Oh, if you know Yiddish, Hintom Geschlepp Ganze Kep. There's no way to translate that, believe me. So I then, Richard Joel, the president, I taught 3 of his children, wonderful, raised a wonderful family, did a better job raising his family than he did fundraising for YU. 6 children, his wife is an Isha Gadola. So I go to say goodbye to Richard, and he says to me, be careful when you get back. Machon Lev is expanding, so they're right next to us. They would love to buy our campus. And he says, be careful. We got to keep a presence in Jerusalem. I got back to Israel, and they elect a new president of Machon Lev. I knew every president, but now a new one. So he meets me, and he knew me as a Rebbe in YU. He was a kid then. He was in high school, and I was already a Rosh Yeshiva there. So he meets me, and he hugs me, he's so respectful, and he says, oh, Rav Kefet, do me a favor. If you could only make the campus, tell them we want to buy it, we'll get it. And he said, oh, we promise you we'll have a room that you can teach. The Kollel can continue to function. You'll always have a place to teach. So, if you know the Gemara, Oili miyetzri, v'oli miyotzri, v'oli miyitzri. On either side, I'm getting pushed. All right, so let me end off. My dear friends, I hope one day I'll have you in my classroom and I'll get to know your names. I always distinguish between a student in front of me and a virtual student because David can listen to my shiurim and we can interact because we know each other. I yet knew his grandparents. You got to know the stock he comes from. His grandparents had a shul in Winfield, Philadelphia, the Gornishes, when there wasn't a frum Jew in all of Philadelphia. On the fingers of one hand, you could count the frum Jews. And so it was a whole conservative temple there when I got there. And, it's history. No one knows my name there today, and no one knows my name in Maplewood, South Orange. But that's life. Daholech Dobar, and that's life. And thank God we have great-grandchildren to carry on. That's what's important. So, virtual students, Baruch Hashem. But students in front of you are what makes the Rebbe a lot smarter. So we spent the morning interacting. I thank Eli Schlesberg for his question. It maybe gave me a chance to sharpen an outlook, but there's much more. I've spoken about this in very, very great detail over the decades. And some of you know I have Talmidim in Lakewood, in Satmar, in Bavov, in Ger, in Vishnitz, in Mir, in Ney Yisrael, in Australia, in South America, in France, and all over Israel. And people are listening, people are listening. I hope they absorb, and you don't have to be like me or think like me. I'm very different, but you have to be a Ben Torah to the best of your ability. The contemporary times, the state of Israel, and whether you like it or not, North Miami Beach and all that sphere is just a small comma around what's happening in the Holy Land. Sometimes I have to pinch myself as well. My neighborhood today, Rehavia, Katamon, my daughter lives, one daughter, Katamon, we're flooded. The joke going around is the only time you hear Hebrew in Rehavia Katamon is when an Olev from France meets an Olev from America, so they have to speak a broken Hebrew to each other. That's the joke going around. It's epic making, and what we're up against, the army we forged, the weapons we have developed, what the Jewish mind is capable of. The problems are real. We have a long way to go yet, but we have to be inspired that we're trying. And this is an open Rambam. And here I'm going to give you a special gift. At the age of 38, following the Yom Kippur War, I did basic training. Till the Yom Kippur War, they didn't bother Americans. At 38, I'm called up. It's the real McCoy. Basic training, all right, an older group. And it happened to be an unbelievable experience, but it was shocking to me. All around me, I heard curse words. You're under tremendous pressure. You're running, they're teaching you, they're breaking you as an individual. You know, an army is a unit. If you're not a unit, the army cannot survive. And that's what basic training is all about, besides gaining very basic skills. So I heard, as I mentioned, curses in Russian, English. Heard nothing in Hebrew, because even when you curse in Hebrew, it's Talmud Torah. It's an amazing thing. What are the curse words in Hebrew? Ata ben zona. Ben zona? Entire sugyas in ketuvah. Kivama. Kedushin. Ben nida. In my new book coming out, I write about what does a ben nida? What does it mean? What is the Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya? What are we paskin? What does it mean halachically? How many b'nei nida? We have Balei Tshuva. We probably have more Jews b'nei nida today than Jews who aren't. From Jews I'm talking about. So you're cursing a kid. And I remember I used to hear this on the streets when I came in Aliyah. I couldn't believe it. Ooh, just think, he's quoting a Gemara and he's maledicting his friend. So when I got into the army, I developed a patent which I have subsequently given away as a gift tens of thousands of times. I actually used to use it in my opening lectures, because afterwards I was in the lecture corps of the army. And I used to use it in my opening lectures. I'm saying it in English, but I'm living it in Hebrew. My dear fellow soldiers, I'm going to teach you how to curse your commanders and at the same time, concomitantly, learn Torah. And they would all, 300 people would lunge forward to catch this crazy guy with the Hebrew, with the American accent. What is he going to teach us? And I called the Rambam, and you can check it out. Hilt Melachim Peret Yud Bet Halacha Bet. The Rambam discusses Yomot HaMashiach, and he says we have this point of view, that point of view. How will it happen? And then the Rambam says it's based upon a Gemara in Chelek in Sanhedrin. Tipach Rucham Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. May those who try to figure it out, may they drop dead. Wow. And the Rambam explains, there's so much contradiction. These are the words of the Rambam. We won't know until we live it. So there's Rakefet on the training grounds, on the shooting grounds, targets in front of... And... the mafaktim are driving us crazy, the commanders, and everyone is cursing this one in English and this one in Russian and this one is in Arabic. And there's Rakefet learning Torah. Tipach Rucham Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. And in his mind he's thinking, not Mechashvei Kitzim, but Mefaktim. And the Mefaket says, Rakefet, Matam Amalea, what are you mumbling? Learning Torah, HaMefaket. Continue. Tamshich. Gentlemen, we won't know till we live it. We are living it. Be big enough to do something with your life. Don't just be another social security number. Be involved with changing the destiny, the calling, the achievement, the saga of the eternal Torah people. The kavod ulutiferet hayahadut hanemana. Thank you very, very much. Thank you, Rabbi Kier. Thank you, David. I thank you for all the people who are listening for recording. And thank you, our representative from the great community of Baltimore. Shabbat shalom, umevarach, das v'dalia.